You're in the grand theme of things. The Logbook.com soundtrack mixtape podcast is back with more selections, all centered around a single theme. A setting, similar plots, maybe something else. Something connects all the music you'll be hearing today. I'm Earl Green. Sit back and relax and enjoy a little bit of free association with music from movies, TV, and games. It's all in the grand theme of things. Welcome to a special bonus edition of In the Grand Theme of Things. This episode is being released on July 4th, 2016. And the theme for this podcast is Hey Jupiter, music for movies, which rather heavily involve the planet Jupiter. Now, here's why we're talking about this on July 4th, 2016. Later this evening, as the cow flies, NASA's new Jupiter probe Juno will be firing its engines for a Jupiter orbit insertion burn to allow it to slow itself down enough to be captured into the gravity of Jupiter, where it will begin, at least, a one-year mission orbiting the planet, checking out the clouds and the atmosphere, taking a few pictures, but mainly analyzing the atmosphere of Jupiter. And so it seemed like an opportune moment to get all Jovian with our music selection. So let's get right to it. Our first bit of great red spotting today is probably this may or may not be the most obscure. The selections for this edition are a little off the beaten track. This movie was made in Japan, where it is known variously as Bye Bye Jupiter or Sayonara Jupiter. For some reason, Japanese film titles love to appropriate words from other languages. Because I'm sitting here looking at Sayonara Jupiter, and I'm thinking, Arrivederci Yamato. How Japanese is that? The music is by Kentaro Hinata, and the movie was released in 1984. It's a science fiction movie about a radical ecological group trying to ignite Jupiter into a second sun, or stop someone from igniting Jupiter into a second sun, or something like that. Let me say this about that. I have actually watched this movie, because, you know, you tell me, hey, there's a movie about Jupiter, I'm there. I love Jupiter. It's fascinated me since I was 7 years old, and, you know, those first Voyager pictures and, you know, flip book animations came in, and it was just like, wow, Jupiter, that's my planet right there. The reason it's so hard to follow Sayonara Jupiter is that it, you know, in the laudable tradition of such things as Star Trek, it features a very international cast. Various members of this international cast of characters speak their native languages, which may or may not be subtitled. It's a really hard movie to follow. It's got some miniature work that is either very good or it's just a head-scratcher. And something tells me this movie would have been better off as anime rather than live action. This is actually a live action movie. Now, since Sayonara Jupiter came out in 1984, this means it came out at roughly the same time as 2010, the year we make contact, which was also a Jupiter Fest. We've already featured music from 2010 previously in the podcast, and I'll include a link to that episode in the links for this episode. So, I'm not going to play any music from 2010, little spoiler there, even though it seems like an obvious choice. We've already been there. Interestingly enough, both 2010, the year we make contact, and Sayonara Jupiter had to take into account the wild amount of atmospheric detail that had been recently, you know, then recently, shown by the Voyager spacecraft in 1979. And one other thing about Sayonara Jupiter that I really could have done without this element of it. Four words for you. Zero gravity sex scene. Now, why? Why, Sayonara Jupiter? I'm just going to play you the soundtrack, so this may be the best takeaway from this movie. As you listen to this, if you are familiar with Gustav Holst's The Planets Suite, which includes an entire movement devoted to Jupiter, listen to the beginning of this and see if you notice some similarities, like a little bit of a hat tip to Holst. I think it's completely intentional, but it might be just a coincidence. Here is Kentaro Hinata's music from Sayonara Jupiter. Music from the 1984 Japanese live-action science fiction movie Sayonara Jupiter. Music was by Kentaro Hanada. Now, earlier I mentioned 2010, the year we make contact. We are going to backpedal from there and talk about 2001. Namely, the fact that as well-known and well-loved as its soundtrack of the abstract, atonal choral music and orchestral classics is, 2001 was originally meant to have its own original music. 2001 A Space Odyssey was originally intended to be scored by Alex North, composer of such movies as Cleopatra, Dragon Slayer, and Good Morning Vietnam. No small amount of talent being brought to bear on Stanley Kubrick's new science fiction epic. Now, the problem that Alex North ran into was that Kubrick had already temp-tracked the movie with the classical pieces that he liked, and he fell in love with the temp tracks. He gave Alex North very vague notes and basically just said, listen to the temp tracks. Now, temp tracking is a practice for producers and directors, mainly, where an existing piece of music will be edited into a rough cut of a film or a television show, an early edit. And the composer will come in and be told, okay, come up with something that's like this, but don't get sued. So Alex North was stuck with this temp track where whatever he came up with, whatever magnificent original masterpieces he came up with, they're going to have to compete with the Blue Danube Waltz to get in the movie. Alex North finished the music for everything up to the movie's intermission, and he was then told by Kubrick that the rest of the movie would be tracked with quote-unquote breathing effects. That's not entirely a lie. A lot of the last half of the movie has a soundtrack, if you will, of the astronauts breathing, which may be realistic, but it's hardly musical. It wasn't until Alex North went to the world premiere of the film that he realized, and this was kind of a gut punch to him, none of his music had been used. Kubrick had failed to edit any of Alex North's score into 2001 A Space Odyssey. Instead, he just stuck with the temp track. Alex North brought his music home and put it away. Some of it adapted, and some of it he kept around and adapted for later films that he was scoring. And there's no point in throwing away a perfectly good idea. And he filed away a cassette tape of the recording sessions that he had done in 1967. Despite the obscurity of his unused score from 2001, A Space Odyssey, Alex North's soundtrack that was never used by Stanley Kubrick has been released in two different forms. In the early 1990s, not long after Alex's death, Varese Sarabande released a re-recording of the original 2001 score, conducted by none other than Alex North's friend, colleague, and protege, Jerry Goldsmith. And later in 2007, the original recordings, the cassette tape that I told you about, those were found and cleaned up and released on CD by Entrada. The Varese version sounds a lot better. It's a much more modern recording space, and it's not a, you know, let's be straight about it, it's not a 40-year-old tape. So, there are things that I recommend about both of them. But for our purposes, we'll be playing the re-recorded version conducted by Jerry Goldsmith. Here are selections from Alex North's unused score from 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Thank you.
selections from the unused soundtrack of 2001 A Space Odyssey. Back in the early days when it was going to have an original soundtrack by Alex North. Instead, of course, Stanley Kubrick decided to track the movie entirely with classical music and abstract music. Here's a fun fact for you. Since our theme this time around is Jupiter, Arthur C. Clarke wrote the novel of 2001, placing it in orbit around the planet Saturn. However, as hard as he tried to come up with a workable filming model of the planet Saturn, Stanley Kubrick decided it was far too hard to do, and he was going to use Jupiter instead. And in response to that, Arthur C. Clarke had to move the sequel novels, which also influenced the 1984 movie 2010, The Year We Make Contact. All of that got moved to Jupiter because, for most people, the movie is the definitive statement of the story rather than the novel. Although, in high school, a friend of mine and I made the discovery that if you had the novel in front of you and you were watching the movie, some of the longer silent passages gave you enough time to read the relevant parts of the book and figure out what the hell was going on if you didn't already know. So now we're going to get quite a bit more modern, and we're gonna have to reach just a little bit in our Jupiter-themed podcast this time around. We now go to 2015 and the Wachowskis movie Jupiter Ascending. Now, it depends on who you ask about this movie. There really seems to be a love-hate relationship with it. It was originally intended to be released in 2014, but the post-production and special effects and CGI for it were backbreaking, and it got pushed back to 2015, and also undertook some re-editing in that time. The critics didn't exactly like it. However, it has gotten a little bit of a following after the fact for subverting the typical gender roles that you have in these, you know, hero's journey inspired sci-fi epics, which that's probably something that needed to happen. The music for Jupiter Ascending was done by Michael Giacchino, he who has scored Lost, Alias, the J.J. Abrams-produced Star Trek films, including Star Trek Into Darkness and Star Trek Beyond, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. You name it, Michael Giacchino has scored it, and that includes Jupiter Ascending. Music from the 2015 movie Jupiter Ascending. The music was composed by Michael Giacchino. That concludes our special edition July 4th bonus round of In the Grand Theme of Things. Just mere hours from now, or maybe it's already happened by the time you're listening to this. Yeah, maybe you're listening to this with good news in your head and a smile on your face. Juno will be firing its engines to go into orbit around Jupiter, and we will have a ringside seat with the King of the Planets for the first time since the early 2000s, when the Galileo orbiter was disposed of in the clouds of Jupiter to prevent it from lingering around long enough to crash into one of the moons of Jupiter, especially Europa, which is seen as a hot candidate for having an ocean on a body other than Earth. So many fascinating things going on out there in Jupiter's neighborhood, and some fascinating music too. Hope you've enjoyed it. Our Jovian theme is coming to an end, and we'll see you next time at the regular time for In the Grand Theme of Things. That's all for now. In the Grand Theme of Things, we'll be back next week with more movie, TV, and game music connected by a common theme. Just a reminder, all of the music you've heard is copyrighted by the respective composers, labels, and studios. Visit www.thelogbook.com/music/podcast for a listing of what you heard in this installment and links to purchase your own copies. Due to restrictions on file size and storage, what you've heard today was presented at a fairly low audio quality. By purchasing the commercially available CDs or downloads, you can hear it even better. I strongly encourage you to support the labels that are taking the time and expense to remaster and reissue classic soundtrack music. They're making music available to which longtime movie and TV music fans have never dreamed of having access, and I hope you'll join me in supporting them. In the Grand Theme of Things is written, produced, and hosted by Earl Green.